From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
Welcome to you. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. And we're pleased to tell you about a wonderful event taking place next month on May the 19th. And here to tell us all about it is Patty McKeegan, who is the from the auxiliary for the Carmelite Monastery up in Georgetown. Patty, good morning.
Hi, Bob. Good morning.
Good to have you with us. Tell us about your position.
Well, I'm the president of the auxiliary for the Carmelite Monastery in Georgetown.
Mm-hmm.
So in that function, the auxiliary exists to raise awareness of and support for the Carmelite Monastery in Georgetown.
Tell us a little bit about the, I think, you know, a lot of people know about it, and a lot of people don't know about the monastery in Georgetown. Well, beautiful
right.
Spot.
Right. It is a beautiful spot. So the sisters have been in Sacramento since 1931. They were invited by Bishop Armstrong to come up from Los Angeles and start their monastery. And their function is to pray for the Diocese of Sacramento. Their first location was down on Stockton Boulevard. You know where UC Davis is now?
Yes, right.
Yeah, that's where their
monastery was. The old state fairgrounds.
Right. It was there for about 50 years.
Wow.
And because UC Davis grew up around them and it just is a noisy part of town, they needed to find a quieter place to live. So they sold that property and spent a little bit of time in Loomis, actually, while they were looking for a place to build. And then they settled on this property in Georgetown. It's actually just out of Georgetown on Fox Run Road, which is, if you take Wentworth Springs Road out of Georgetown, it's right off of Wentworth Springs Road on Fox mm-hmm. Run Road. So it is in the mountains. It's about 3,000 feet. They do get a little bit of snow.
I was going to say, almost the cutoff line for snow.
Yeah, that's right. It's just a dribbling of snow.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't really stay. But they've been there since the 80s, and they are a wonderful group of sisters, and they pray constantly for the people of the Sacramento Diocese, for our priests, for the bishop, and they have some young sisters, some older sisters, some middle-aged group. Mm-hmm. They're a really young group. There's 16 of them.
16
and
total?
And they're just wonderful people.
Mm-hmm. And did most of them come from this area, or are they from all over?
They are from all over the United States. But a couple of sisters transferred in from the Reno area,
mm-hmm.
and one of the sisters is actually local to Georgetown.
Oh, wow. That's not a big city. It's not even a city.
No, I know. Yeah. But they are from all over. And they're getting a regular influx of young sisters in these most recent years. So they're a strong community. And they love to pray for the people of Sacramento. So you can call them. They have a website, CarmeliteMonastery.org. And you can call them for prayer. And we have a website, CarmeliteAuxiliary.org. So we promote them through our website as well.
I wish I'd had that phone number before I had to pay my taxes.
Well, I don't know if they could keep you from paying taxes.
I can see their prayer list. That might be a little bit far down on the list.
They pray for it's amazing to me how people come up to me and tell me that their prayers were answered because the sisters were praying for them.
I'm sure they're going to be flooded with phone calls now.
Probably now I'm in trouble. Okay, but they are such good women, and they pray so fervently for all of us here in Sacramento, including our priests.
Tell us a little more about the Carmelites.
Well, the Carmelite order, this particular group of Carmelites are discalced, and that mm-hmm. means that they are cloistered.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't really meet with people, but they will take your phone call. It's a recorded message, and they will take your phone call and prayer request, and they will pray for you. You can go up to Georgetown and visit the monastery. They have a very beautiful chapel. It's just exquisitely beautiful, in my opinion. And it has been in the past. It's been one of those designated sites that you can go and get a special novena or a special dispensation for visiting. So it's kind of a destination for prayer, apostolates, that kind of thing. So you can go up, you can visit in the chapel. It's open all day long. Mass is always at 8 a.m. Every day of the week. And the sisters sing, and they sound beautiful, but you cannot visit them unless you have a special permission, and that would be, you know, you would call Mother Mary Bethany is the prioress right now. You would call Mother and ask for permission to visit.
And what's the phone number again there, Prayer Line?
It's 530-333-1617.
Oh, that's a good number to have.
Yeah, and so with the auxiliary, we have had a springtime series of events and then a fall event. Our springtime series of events is what we have called Prayer on the Mountain. And we have a speaker followed by a little salad luncheon. And we always have that up at the monastery. But this year, for several different reasons, we decided to just have one big event. And instead of calling it Prayer on the Mountain, we're calling it Wisdom on the Mount. And we're having Father Matthew Spencer come and speak.
Wow. Yeah.
And I'll talk about that a little bit. Let me just finish this other thought. The fall event that we have is our fundraiser luncheon. And that is usually a spaghetti luncheon. The last 2 years, it's been held at St. Joseph's in Auburn. And we're very, very grateful for their support. We love St. Joseph's. They've been very kind to us. And this coming fall, it'll be on October 6th. It's always the first weekend in October. This coming fall, it will be at St. Mel's Parish in Fair Oaks.
Fair Oaks, yeah.
And we're looking forward to that very much. They're very, very excited to have our group come. And it's a luncheon with a raffle and an auction. And there's a slideshow presentation about the monastery. So tickets for that will go on sale probably this summer. And it will be $25 a person. And the tickets will be available on our website, CarmeliteAuxiliary.org.
Very good. Very good.
So would you like to hear about our presentation this spring?
Yeah, Wisdom on the Mount. It's kind of like the Sermon on the Mount.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I love that title. Someone, one of the people in the auxiliary thought that up, and I thought, oh, that's perfect.
That's perfect.
So I was listening to Father Matthew's show last fall, and he had, the particular show that I was listening to happened to be about the importance of prayer to uphold the church in turbulent times. And it was a very important experience for me because I thought, this is exactly what everybody needs to hear. We need to understand that prayer is really what holds us together as a church, especially in times that are as troubled as they are today for us. And I was very excited about his talk, and I thought he could elucidate on some of the points that he made. And so I invited him to speak on that topic for the monastery, and he is going to do that, and the date is May 19th, where he will be speaking at the Morello Youth Retreat Center in Loomis, and his topic is called, It is Good That We Are Here, Monastic Prayer as a Path to Transformation.
Hmm.
And I thought that that is a very inspiring topic, especially today when we really need to think about the importance of prayer, how strongly we can be supported by prayer and through prayer. And since we have not only the Carmelite Monastery in Georgetown, but also the Claretian Monastery in Vina.
Right.
And, you know, we have people in our area that do nothing but pray for our protection and for our well-being and for good choices for our government and for our priests, to uphold our priests, to uphold our bishop. So this is what the talk is going to be about. Prayer as a path to transformation, and particularly monastic prayer.
What do we mean by monastic prayer?
Well, the sisters, they're in a monastery, so they don't come out. All they do is pray. They pray from morning until night. They do the liturgical prayers of the day, the liturgy of the hours. They offer Mass every day for the intentions of our diocese. So their entire focus is on beseeching God to take good care of us here in the Diocese of Sacramento. I was just reading a book about St. Catherine of Siena, and I was so moved by how strongly and with great firm faith she prayed to God for our intercession. And I'm not talking about just a casual prayer here and there, oh, God, please let my children be okay, or, oh, God, please help me get a better job, which are all really important prayers. But these women give their entire lives so that God will hear us and care for us and keep us in his care. That's monastic prayer. You know, it's that conscious, continual awareness that I have a connection to my God and that he hears my prayer. So it's, you know, it's adoration as well. It's adoration first and foremost, followed by the request kind of prayers that we normally do, but primarily adoration. You know, that right relationship between me and my God.
And, you know, I got to meet Father Matthew Spencer at, we were broadcasting from the Walk for Life in January. And he happened by and sat down and chatted with us, and so down to earth, and yet so wise. Maybe those two things go hand in hand.
Well, you know, that's his gift. He is very down to earth. He knows exactly what we need and how to say it to us so that we can receive it in such an understandable and friendly way. He knows how to motivate us in our faith journey, and he knows how to caution us and direct us. I imagine he's a very good spiritual director. He's not my spiritual director, but, you know, I imagine he's just terrific at it. And I'm looking forward to hearing his talk, because when I listen to him on the radio, I'm so inspired by so many things that he says. And I think that this particular topic of the importance of prayer in our daily life is probably central to our life as a Catholic. So
now, is he's in residence at Loomis?
Yes, he is. Yes.
And this will take place in Loomis, not in Georgetown.
That's correct. It's in Loomis, and doors will open at 9 a.m. At 9:30, we have a short presentation on the monastery. And I think he starts speaking at 10 on the dot. And then the whole thing is over by 11:30 a.m. So you still have the whole rest of the day to take care of your gardening and, you know, that run to Home Depot that you have to do and all those other things.
Yes. And that's a Saturday, is that right?
It's a Saturday. We'll have coffee, tea, cookies, that kind of thing. But the doors open at 9 a.m.
I presume you prefer that people sign up ahead of time?
Oh, yes. The tickets are $20, and it's not so much a fundraiser for the sisters as it is we have to pay for the facility.
Right.
So we have to cover our expenses. And the address to get the tickets is www.carmeliteauxiliary.org. And that's all one word, carmeliteauxiliary.org. Or you can also email Brenda at blmcc77@gmail.com.
Very good. And is there a phone number?
And her phone number. She has a phone number. You can also call her 916-502-6693.
Very good. Very good. Well, it's going to be...
Oh, did I say the tickets are $20?
$20,
I think I might have said that. Right.
Well, that's very reasonable. Very reasonable. Well, it's going to be a great event. Again, a Saturday, May the 19th.
It will be a great event because Father Matthew Spencer is one of the most eloquent priests that I know and just loves the Lord and loves to really lift people up through his talks. I mean, if anybody listens to him on Catholic radio, it's a powerful radio show, just fantastic. So I'm looking forward to this talk very much.
Very good. Well, I'm sure everybody will be. And Patty, thanks so much for joining us, and I'm sure you're going to have a mob up there.
I hope so, Bob. That would be great.
Thank you
very much for having me on the show. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, Patty. God bless. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah, that's Patty McKeegan, the president of the Carmelite Auxiliary, and it should be a wonderful, wonderful event. Again, go to carmeliteauxiliary.org. Save the date, More Than S'mores, a fundraising dinner and auction, Saturday, April the 28th at St. John the Evangelist Parish. This is a great way to help send kids to camp, kids who might not otherwise get to go to Camp Pendola. It all benefits the camperships. It's an evening of barbecue, beer and wine, and, of course, s'mores for dessert. Go to friendsofpendola.org. It's a week from Saturday, April the 28th at St. John the Evangelist Parish. Also, the Collar Cup, the tickets are now on sale. This is the great soccer match between our priests and our seminarians. Last year was the very first one, and the seminarians won 1-0. It will all take place on the Saturday, the 23rd of June at Papa Murphy's Park, which is right there at Cal Expo. The event includes a vigil mass with Bishop Soto beginning at 4 p.m., then followed by the soccer match between the priests and the seminarians, and then there's a vocations fair, and also all the concessions will be open, some great food, and then a professional soccer match in the evening, the Sacramento Republic FC against St. Louis FC. Cost of tickets is just $20 for ages 11 and up, $15 ages 3 to 10. You can purchase tickets online at collarcup.com, or you can contact the Office of Vocations. They're at 916-733-0258. I went to the inaugural one last year with one of my daughters and just had a great, great time, and also a very wonderful mass. If you've never attended mass while sitting in the bleachers, it's an experience, and the hot sun, it was quite an experience. Father Chase Hilgenbrink was the celebrant. He was a former professional soccer player before he decided to become a Catholic priest. We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. You can drop by and shop at their thrift store, 2275 Watt Avenue. It's open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, furniture, appliances, clothing, books, and everyday household items. You can give them a call, 916-972-1212. We'd also like to thank the kind and dedicated folks at Associated Sound for all their help in keeping all our equipment running with their excellent sound assistant and technical expertise. When it comes to sound, Associated Sound is the only name you need to know. Give them a call. They're at 916-649-8040 or go online at associatedsound.com. Well, located in Citrus Heights, Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years. Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King as the jewel of the diocese, a wonderful retreat center. They have parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. You can give them a call, 916-725-4720. That's 916-725-4720. Or visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. The Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the good folks at the Catholic Store located at 1928 Broadway in downtown Sacramento. It has articles for baptism, First Communion, confirmation, ordinations, weddings, and much, much more, plus Bibles, books, holy cards, and a variety of gifts. Give them a call, 916-457-1970, or visit them at 1928 Broadway right here in Sacramento. We're also brought to you by a generous grant from the Knights of Columbus Todd Cabral Agency, which provides guaranteed wealth creation for your family and your passion while maintaining the highest ethical standards in the industry. The Knights of Columbus Insurance, keeping Father McGivney's promise alive by providing peace of mind to Catholic families since 1882. To find an agent in your area, call our good friend Todd Cabral. Todd is at 916-997-9999. Bishop Sauer is also pleased to have underwriting support from Catherine Fisher, LCSW, providing therapy and mental health services from a Catholic perspective. Catherine knows that our Catholic faith is interwoven into every aspect of our lives and relationships. She offers counseling for individuals, couples, and families. You can call her at 916-214-4623 or go to C. Fisher, LCSW, at CATHIMail.com.
This is Lincoln Snyder, Superintendent of Catholic Schools, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thanks, Lincoln, and thanks for all you do for Catholic schools. And if you you're interested in Catholic schools, for there's some summer school going on, will be going on this summer or next fall. Just contact the Catholic Schools Department here at the Diocese of Sacramento, and they'll let you know all about what you can do to, you know, what the offerings are, and maybe a school near you or a special school. Maybe you're interested in high school. They can tell you where they are and how to go about learning more about it or signing up. There's going to be a special day, a special evening, prayer for vocations. Vocations are born in prayer and from prayer, and only through prayer can they persevere and bear fruit. Those are the words of Pope Francis. Let us pray for vocations. You're invited to join for a holy hour, benediction, and fellowship Wednesday, May the 9th at 6 p.m. at St. Mel's Parish, 4756 Pennsylvania Avenue in Fair Oaks. It's hosted in collaboration with the Diocese of Sacramento Office of Priestly and Religious Vocations. If you have questions or comments, you can contact Maricela at 916-733-0258 or send her an email, msmith@scd.org. And you can always learn more about it at scd.org/vocations. And it should be a wonderful evening of prayer, holy hour, benediction, and fellowship, Wednesday, May 9th, 6 o'clock at St. Mel's on Pennsylvania Avenue, 4756 Pennsylvania Avenue in Fair Oaks. Well, the we'll have Bishop Soto along in just a minute. He issued a statement as president of the California Catholic Conference, which represents all the bishops of the state of California. These are the words of Bishop Soto. The bishops of California share, representing the bishops of California, share the concerns expressed about the militarization of the border by our brother bishops serving there. Immigrants have enriched the nation since its founding. The U.S. southern border with Mexico is not a war zone. It has long been the bridge for much mutual economic as well as cultural exchange. Troops may be appropriate for drug interdiction duties, but not to guard against men, women, and children seeking a better life. Attempts to fix a broken immigration system using the National Guard are the result of a failure to govern by both executive and legislative branches in Washington. Calling up the good people of the National Guard, the first responders when our communities face disasters, unwisely expends their goodwill and limited resources, pandering to nativist fears and hatreds. These are the words of Bishop Soto as president of the California Catholic Conference, representing all the bishops of the state of California. He goes on to write, "The Guard cannot do the job that Congress has refused to do for decades now. Our nation's leaders must assume their responsibility to enact an immigration reform that provides a humane legal remedy to hardworking immigrant families. Immigration reform should provide both citizens and immigrants reasonable security from those who would harm us. America does not need a better wall. We need stronger leadership committed to protecting human dignity and promoting solidarity with the most vulnerable among us." We had a chance to sit down with Bishop Soto in person last week, and we're going to bring you that interview now. Bishop Jaime Soto joins us. Bishop Soto, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. How you doing, Bob?
Doing very, very good. We were just discussing my young son had an emergency appendectomy Sunday night, but he did go to Mass Sunday morning. So
okay, all right, good, good, good. And he's doing well. Is he home already?
He's home. Yeah. They kept him one night.
Yeah.
And actually the surgery was pretty late at night because it was an emergency. And,
right.
And they sent him home the next day, and he's sore, but he's not in a lot of pain. He's just sore from the incision. And,
right. Right.
But he'll recover. He's a tough
good.
Kid.
But, all right, good. Great.
You never know what's right around the corner. You know?
Oh, boy.
You go from what are we going to have for dinner to how fast can we get him to the hospital?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm glad that you know he's on the mend, and that's such a those are scary episodes.
Yeah.
I just know with my siblings, you know, mm-hmm. that they have those stories that, you know, one moment to the next, all of a sudden you have a crisis on your hand. And
yeah. It's like that old, if you want to hear God laugh, tell him your plans.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Well, please give him my regards, and I'm sure the regards of all our listeners.
We sure will. Thank you, Bishop. So, a lot happening.
We
made it through Easter.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we just, we just had three deacons ordained,
yes.
three transitional deacons, and very exciting. Dean Marshall, Manny Hernandez, and Steve Wood. So,
very good.
Yeah.
I've had the opportunity to interview Dean a time or two.
Oh, is that right?
He's a fun guy.
Oh, he's a very funny guy. Very funny. Well, they're all three funny, actually. So I'm just delighted. In fact, all three of them. Dean's been in and out of the seminary, he had a longer discernment process
right.
than most, and I don't think I'm telling any secrets out of school, but I was always convinced he had a vocation, so I was just really delighted, he's ordained now, and the other two, it's amazing. I can still remember when Manny and Steve came in, and how the years went by quickly, and here they are ordained to the diaconate already. So,
and of course, the transitional diaconate, they will be ordained, and then they will be
ordained priests. Right. Hopefully, with God's grace, they'll be ordained in June of 2019.
So a little over a year.
Yeah,
and that's distinguished from the permanent diaconate, which
right?
Is a separate track, but
right,
also very valuable.
Kind of, you know, in some sense, a very different calling,
right?
You know, a very different calling, and it's just part of the priesthood that you have to be ordained a deacon first, and then
right.
and you'll be ordained a priest, but the permanent diaconate is in some sense. Manny, Steve, and Dean, they're all aspiring to be priests,
sure.
and the permanent diaconate, we have men who are all aspiring to be deacons,
right?
So
right, and most of them are married.
Yeah, that's right.
And I don't know if all of them are, but most of them are, and they do wonderful service to the church as well. Yeah,
yeah.
So, I think about you on Easter, the Saturday Vigil Mass, and quite a long Mass,
yeah,
and very late Mass, because it has to be half an hour after
sundown. I don't know. I don't get it. It gets later every year, Bob. I just don't get it. But
with daylight saving time and Easter can be as late as almost, I think it's the 23rd of April is the latest it can be, and then it has to be after sundown, like
right.
about half an hour.
So it was after 8.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember exactly.
And it can last up to 3 hours?
Well, it was 3 hours.
It was
3 hours. So, I was driving home, after 11 o'clock that night. So.
And then you turn it around the next morning. It's Easter yeah. Sunday.
We had, I'm not complaining. Those are beautiful rituals, and there is a certain joy to it all. I was I enjoyed the whole ritual. I will say I came to it a little bit fatigued because earlier that day we had the walk, and
it started at
7 a.m. The good news is we had 1,000 people plus. Yeah. So maybe around 1,300 folks right. joined the walk. You have a walk that long, and
like, 6 or 7 miles, something.
It's
like
7 miles.
Seven miles.
So you have a walk that long, and to try to keep everybody together, it yeah. just takes longer.
Sure. Oh, sure. Because you're only as fast as the slowest person.
Yeah, that's right. So, in any case, we kind of wrapped that up about after 2 o'clock.
Oh my goodness!
So it was a long.
That's not a world record for seven yeah. miles.
I mean, it's just that you kind of take your time, and so it's not there's nothing. Well, the length is strenuous, but there's not, it's a pretty casual walk. A lot of families, right. a lot of young people. So it was a great experience. And it's a very old Hispanic tradition, normally done actually on Holy Thursday.
Uh-huh.
But because of people's schedules it works out for us to try to do this on a... Mm-hmm. On a Saturday morning, churches are usually pretty quiet, and folks it's become a tradition for a good number of folks to come and join us for this. And we stop at 7 churches and reflect on the 7 last words of Jesus. And given the what the city of Sacramento has been dealing with in recent weeks, and where actually it was really kind of at its peak during Holy Week, it was a poignant and as also a poetic gesture of bringing a very quiet testimony of faith
right.
walking through. All the neighborhoods that
right.
surround the city of Sacramento. So
I thought
what's been happening with the city was on the thoughts and the prayers of mm-hmm. many of the people who were on the procession. So it wasn't in a certain sense like we were ignoring that, but I think it was actually very much at the heart of what we were doing, and that the importance of doing this of actually providing this kind of quiet, prayerful. Testimony was on the minds of many of the people who mm-hmm. were, and it was definitely in our prayers as we went from church to church.
That's good. It's been a really difficult several weeks, and I know people have different opinions about it, but I feel like leadership from the police chief to the mayor is really concerned about doing the right thing here.
Right. Yeah. No, I don't know if you had a chance to see the my reflections or thoughts on this. Yes. With regards to on Palm Sunday, but I think the truth of the matter is you know that when that any killing whatever the circumstances,
right.
You know is evil, and that and you're going to see the consequences,
yep.
of that, and
absolutely.
The judgments as to the actions of the police officers here is still something to that will be coming, and
right.
And there's obviously going to be continued debate and consideration about how do we manage these kinds of situations,
exactly.
in the future, but we all, particularly from a moral standpoint, have to understand that there's the commandment "Thou shalt not kill" is there for a reason.
Yeah, and there aren't a whole bunch of amendments to it.
Yeah,
it just says "Thou shalt not kill."
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there are, again, circumstances where you moral teachers talk about necessary evils,
sure. like
but you have to acknowledge it's an evil.
Exactly, and through the you'll see a lot of it in the just war,
mm-hmm.
Theory of the not theory.
Yes,
guidelines.
That's true. Yes,
yeah,
yeah. But I think it definitely is something that. Particularly as we carry on this whole reflection about policing and how to do proper,
yeah.
policing. But I think one of the things that's important for us to keep in mind, my concern is that there's a lot of focus now on policing, and
sure.
and some of that is appropriate, and we do need to I think the mayor and the police chief have to and the city council have to examine about how do we do better policing? But I think the broader issue is that so much has been laid on the police department, and that there aren't oftentimes a lot of the other structures or supports in neighborhoods,
right.
and communities,
right.
and so the police become the counselor, the social worker,
mm-hmm.
The mental health worker of last resort.
Right. Right.
And it puts them in a very difficult, oftentimes
absolutely.
Very difficult circumstances. And, yep. And because oftentimes there aren't the other kinds of community supports,
right.
that help to contribute to creating safe and flourishing neighborhoods and communities, particularly in some of our more at risk or stressed
yeah.
neighborhoods in the city.
Yeah, no, it's a difficult issue. You try to look at it from both sides, and as you say, killing is evil. And it becomes the bottom line. But there are you can see from both sides,
right.
And it really shouldn't be a matter of sides. But it happens.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be a matter of just focusing on the police department.
Right.
I think we have to look at what other resources, it comes down to, Jesus's question, to the scribe, the scribe had said, who is my neighbor?
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus turns the question around and says, who was, after the parable of the Good Samaritan, who was the neighbor?
Right.
Right. And that is something that we have to make that decision to be the neighbor,
right.
The good neighbor with one another. And that's we have to ask the questions about the police department, about, how do we improve our schools? How do we address the issues of trying to create alternatives for children and young people?
Right.
And but then it has become a very personal question of how am I going to be a good neighbor?
Exactly. Well, I look at the the Moral Values Program, Frank and Monica Victorio,
yeah, sure.
You know,
yeah.
And they go right into the heart of at-risk neighborhoods and try to, you know, one-on-one help kids. You know, programs like that, and I know a lot of our Catholic schools try to, find at-risk kids and bring them into the school system in a very positive way. So it's you're right. It's a multifaceted problem.
I would just encourage everyone to try to keep that in prayer, and then also that oftentimes because of the. What's the word? The the level of emotion, mm-hmm. and some of it is just a lot of anger out there. But the temptation can be to want to retreat from that and pull back. And I think that in some sense, I guess what I learned from as we followed through with our procession of the seven churches, that it's important for us to continue to be proactive and to. As a church, to do what we do best, and to be a light in our neighborhoods and in our communities, and
absolutely.
So
we're talking with Bishop Jaime Soto. Bishop Soto, you and your fellow bishops of California authored a statement about the National Guard on the border, and also. Bishops from the border states issued a similar statement.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about the if you would about the issues there and what sort of the Catholic values that are involved as well.
Well, I think that our concern is that. First of all, let me say that the United States government has an obligation and it's within its right to try to do what it can to protect the border and to create a reasonable security for us. I mean that's a nation has a right to sovereignty, but at the same time, I think it's not either or, but these are, we also have to look at how do we care for people, particularly immigrants and refugees, and how best do we respond to that, and for the United States, that is a very integral part of our tradition. That's in some sense that really does go to the DNA of what makes an American. And so, the idea of building a wall on mm-hmm. there that we have too many examples, starting with the Berlin Wall the sense of the wall there in the Holy Land,
right?
While it seems like those kind of solve immediate problems, they become problems themselves.
Yeah, the symbol of it.
Yeah, they become problems themselves, and the work of the National Guard, they're very important both for domestic as well as international support when needed, and my fear is that in the current environment that this is more of a polemical gesture mm-hmm. than it is one to really address some real issues there at the border, and I think that there have been the past despite some of the polemical remarks made, that I think that there have been strides have been made with regards to trying to create a safer border, And I've had the opportunity in the past to speak with men and women of the Border Patrol, and I know, you know, that some do make mistakes, but others are just trying to do a very difficult right. job, and that yep. sometimes it's not a matter of just that their work is not a matter of just apprehending folks, but sometimes their work is saving lives.
Absolutely.
Of people in the desert. Yeah, so, but I'm... So I think that there's the reality of what needs to happen at the border, and then there's the politics mm-hmm. of immigration that I think cloud what would be sound policies, you know, at the border.
So,
but I think part of the issue is that, you know, that. An immigration reform bill, which is something that the bishops have, not just in California but across the country, have been insisting is so important, that can go a long way to try to address the yeah. issues that we have about the border, right. and that will be a more effective means of addressing some of the issues by taking what are, you know, a significant population here in the United States who work very hard and who are already contributing to American society, and to provide them the way that they can participate more fully and come out of the shadows and provide for themselves as well as, I think, also for the rest of the country, you know, a sense of security and common bonds that mm-hmm. That are important. And so my fear is that this is more about polemics than it is mm-hmm. about good policy.
So the bishops obviously have been on the forefront of the immigration debate for years now, and the sort of the truism is the closer you get it to an election, the less chance there is that
unfortunately that's
you're going to have action. If the bishops were in charge, I guess, what are the two or three or four things that the bishops would of the United States would, and you're pretty much united on this,
right?
That you would like to see with the immigration, quote unquote, debate or the immigration problem, if you will.
Well, I think one of the things, you know, a few of the things that we think would be. I'll say one thing that does concern me in terms of the current debate, and that as the bishops speaking from our own moral tradition, that any immigration legislation has to address the unification of the family.
Yes, yes,
and that some of the current new ideas that are coming out is in fact that, you know, trying to. I think that the expression chain migration is an offensive
yes.
Term that undermines the realities of families yeah. that have always been a part of the immigration traditions
sure.
and in our country, and that we have always honored that, and so that to betray that. That moral and civic principle that has always been a part of immigration, right. I think is very distressing for us. And so we would, you know, that's an important principle. And I think that, you know, looking for that again, many folks, immigrant families, have already been here a good number of years, mm-hmm. and you know, and many of them have already paid taxes, you know, and have been gainfully employed. So when we talk about a legalization program, as was done back in 1986, you know, that there's a way to do that so that people meet certain criterias, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know, and demonstrate, an ability to be able to participate mm-hmm. in American life, and that you know that those folks should be given an opportunity. I think the program back in '86 was very successful, and I think that that could be done again. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I think also that and this goes back to the family unification issue, that one of the more significant drivers of undocumented immigration is the fact that certain family categories are backlogged, you know, unreasonably backlogged. You know, they're up to 10 years or more.
Right.
And that's not true for most countries. Actually, most countries, the family visas are relatively current. But there are those countries where, you know, visas are seriously backlogged. You know, Mexico, Central America, the Philippines, and India, are all and most of those most of those countries are also where oftentimes the bulk of the undocumented population are found, because the waiting periods for families to be united is just unreasonable. So there should be a way to address that. And I would lastly say, and not to get too much into the weeds on this, but the U.S. will always have labor demands that will fluctuate, and how best to respond to those, how best to manage immigrant labor to in response to those demands. That I don't think that we do have some worker visas, but they tend to be rather inflexible. And how can we create programs that, for example, you know, as the agriculture or construction,
right?
You know, as the demand in some of those areas grow, you know, how do you expand the visas to be able to meet that demand, so that people, so both for the sake of the workers as well as for, for you know, the society, that they're, you know, that they, somebody comes in with the, you know, the proper legal protections. And I, you know, I go back to my experience when I was a young priest, and there was a certain amount of immigrant labor that went back and forth, either for construction or for agriculture, and it was mostly men at that time,
mostly even men. The Bracero program,
and they would come back and forth, and leave their families in the host countries while they were there for, you know, in the United States for 3 months, 4 months.
And even though they were obviously in the Bracero program, a lot of abuses that are even now coming to light, there was some positive to it. Although unfortunately, that didn't involve the families.
Yeah.
You know.
But I think that there's ways to try to I'm hopeful that there would be a way to try to address that and create that as an opportunity for folks.
Yeah. Well, it's a complicated problem, and California primary is 2 months away. So the primary is going on.
Yeah, you know, at a certain point, I think the window is pretty closed until after the elections, and so that's I don't want to get too much into the particulars of the politics, but I just today, you know, Paul Ryan just announced that he was not going to run, and I, you know, I mean, he is the speaker for the Congress, and you know, there was a certain reluctance for him to move more aggressively on immigration, but I also believe that he kind of understood the issue.
I
was hopeful that he would, a little disappointed that he wasn't more aggressive on it, but I think he understood the church's position and wanted to help promote that. And, you know, unfortunately, that, you know, he'll be stepping, you know, well, he won't, he's going to, he won't run for re-election, and so, and as to what the new leadership will do with that, we'll have to see.
And we don't even know if we don't know yet if the leadership will be Republican or Democrat at this point in the House.
That's right. We'll have to see. I will say, you know, I do want to. mention before I go that there is obviously the new apostolic exhortation
that
the Holy Father has come out with, Gaudete ex exultate.
I fumbled on that one.
And, just got to practice it a few times. And but it's, Holy Father Pope Francis is once again underlined the call to holiness, which was one of the, I think, fundamental calls the Vatican Council, mm-hmm. the Second Vatican Council, Absolutely. Was the call to holiness. Right. And so I have not had a chance to kind of work my way through the document. It's still just kind of hot off the presses. But just in terms of reading some of the highlights, I think that this will be a welcome document in helping us to step back and look at a lot of the work that has been done over the papacies of St. John Paul II, and Pope Benedict, and now Pope Francis. And to see that that common thread mm-hmm. of how do we seek to be holy, and one of the remarks that Pope Francis says is, do not be afraid of holiness,
right.
Don't be afraid to be a holy people, and I think there's going to be a lot to mine in that mm-hmm. document, and I would just encourage folks to read it.
Yeah, and it's available in a lot of places right now. And
yeah.
The secular soundbite that we're getting out of it is, he wants us all to be saints. What a novel idea.
Yeah. Let's think about that.
Let's think about that. Indeed. Bishop, thanks so much for your time and for all you do.
Well, we do it together, Bob. And again, my regards to all the family, especially your son.
Thank you. And
may we all be able to have a very joyful and blessed Easter season.
Thanks, Bishop Soto.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy Ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love, and you can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation by calling 916-851-2700. Fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Mercy ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts is for all of us. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. Give them a call. They're at 916-338-7272 or drop on and visit them, 6916-6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Well, if you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to where you want to go. Details are available at Crumley & Associates. They're at 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks, or give them a call at 916-638-4600. We thank them for their longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. Underwriting is also provided to the Bishop's Hour by Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services, a ministry of the Diocese of Sacramento. As a church-owned nonprofit founded in faith, Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services is dedicated to providing education, support, and resources during life's most difficult moments. They will make every effort to enable you to realize your final wishes while empowering families to make completely informed decisions. You can give them a call, 855-525-2285. We thank all the wonderful underwriters for the Bishop's Hour, and we hope you will support those who support us. Thanks for listening, everybody. God bless. We'll talk to you again soon.
We stand and lift up our hands, for the joy of the Lord is our strength. We bow down and worship Him now.
How great, how awesome is He, and together we sing. The Lord.